Now here's a title for you. If we just were not human. This is the thought for today. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. If we just were not human, that'd be an interesting situation, wouldn't it? People seem to want to walk their spiritual path. They want to, they feel a drive within them to do beautiful things and to be all that they can be. But the drive isn't strong enough to really make them do something about it. The drive is just strong enough to get them to the edge of doing something, but not enough to get them over the edge. If we just were not human, we could get along just fine. We have so many human attributes within us that want to be fulfilled and want to be played out, and it just keeps us from flowing so nicely with who we are. How can we overcome, or how can we get around this condition of being human? How can we get around this condition of wanting to have all the human attributes and all the human limitations and generosity, you might say, and be in favor of our absolute self, our divine self? Well, that's a good question. A lot of people have said that they want to walk the spiritual path. They want to do that. And to walk the spiritual path means that you let the human go. Now, if you're not ready to let the human go, then you just have to take your time and walk along your spiritual awareness as it will come in its own time. Perhaps never. Perhaps never in this life experience, and perhaps right now. But it's up to us to decide what it is we want to have. What is it that you want? Do you want to be able to be all and all right now? Or do you want to be a little bit and have the feelings that go with it and have the emotions that go with it? What sort of an attitude do you want to have? Yeah, you have to think about that. You got to think about what sort of an attitude you want to have, because these attitudes are not easy to come by. These attitudes are not easy to stand up for. Just take, for instance, the simple attitude of a person who's sick. Now, that's a common enough experience for all of us. A person who's sick. As practitioners, we work with a person who's sick, and we say to him, "You're whole and perfect." Now, we don't really mean it, because if we meant it, then that person would never be in our life in the first place as being sick. That person would never be in our life asking the question if we really meant it. But we sort of half-hearted mean it, and they sort of half-hearted get out of their lethargy, out of their sickness, and into their wholeness. But if we really meant it, it would be like Jesus talking to the fig tree. The fig tree did not give out fruit when it was supposed to do so. And he said, "That's it. You've had your opportunity to be fruitful and to manifest what was your divine purpose inside yourself. So dry up and blow away." So it dried up and blew away. Now, Jesus wasn't saying that just to be mean to a tree. There's a lot of trees that are not bearing fruit. But he was using it as an illustration for humanity. He was using it as an illustration for mankind, that if they don't use their spiritual gifts, they dry up and blow away. If they don't have a full awareness of where they want to go and what they want to accomplish, they spend a lot of wasted time going nowhere and ultimately getting nowhere. Now, we say to people, "Oh, that's so human." We say to people, "It's nice to feel sorry for yourself, you know. when you feel sorry for yourself. That's so, so human. What's another very human thing? To cry. The very human thing is to cry. And we all cry. And crying is kind of fun sometimes. But crying also is an indication of you not being in total control of your emotions. You not being in total control of your attitude, your life and your world about you. And it's just because you don't want to. You say, we all say, that we want to walk the spiritual path with all our heart. We want to be spiritually illumined beings. We want to leave behind the negativity of being human. And then, the first opportunity that we have to do that, we run away from it. We run away from it. The first opportunity is when we hurt ourselves. Stub our toe or do anything that silly. And we don't immediately say, I'm whole and perfect. Because that's our reality. We're whole and perfect. We just don't immediately say that. Because we say, well, the evidence is there. Just look at all the blood. You know, just look at all the mess there. And the evidence is there. Hey, 2 seconds before, the evidence was there, and there was no blood, and there was no mess. Why are you letting this little evidence that is there right now be your end and all? And why are you letting that be the thing that's guiding you and controlling you? Well, that's because you want to be human. But I don't want to be human. I want to be divine. Okay? If you want to be divine, what does a divine being do? In first place, a divine being does not stub his toe. A divine being has wrapped himself in his pure white light of love, not as a protection, but to be harmonious with all things that are loving and gentle and beneficial to that person. So now, do you want to do that? Do you want to have the pure white light of love be your program and your direction for this physical body that you have here? We've come to Earth to remember who we are. And in remembering who we are, we're not going to know that we remember who we are. Because if we remember who we are, and we know that we remember who we are, then we still are not that which we want to be. It sounds like an interesting syllogism there. But think about it. Think about it, really. Now, if that's the case there, what's the case in all other areas? In all other areas, it's the same thing. If we do not live as though we are, we will not be. So if you want to live as a spiritual master, you have to find out what a spiritual master does. What does a spiritual master think? What does a spiritual master do? It's not a lot of praying and stuff like that that you think it is. It's not a lot of respecting and honoring God and honoring this and honoring that. It has nothing to do with that. It's just being yourself and having fun. To respect yourself, you always do things that are beneficial to you. To respect yourself, you're always doing things that are harmonious and lots of fun for you. If you do anything contrary to that, you're not respecting yourself. Now, you want to have a happy body. That's a nice thing. That's your vehicle. That's your car. You go down. What kind of a car can you afford? Can you afford an expensive one, or a middle-priced one, or a cheap one, or a used one, or what can you afford? You set the goal yourself for what you can afford, and then you go and buy it. This is what you did with your physical body. You set your goal as to what you can afford in your physical body, and then you buy it. You buy it. How come little children basically start out pretty nice? They're all pretty much equal. Some are a little overweight or underweight, but basically they're about the same. 8 pounds is a normal baby, isn't it? And 8 pounds is how many, what do you call it?
Kilos.
How many kilos is 8 pounds?
Two and something.
3 kilos.
That's what 3. I would say is a normal baby.
Well, that would be about 9 pounds, wouldn't it? So, but eight and a half pounds, 9 pounds. This is what the normal babies, if the baby is at least 8 pounds, he's considered good. He got a good start in life. Okay, why don't we all be born with a good start in life? Why don't we bring our body out of the factory and with proper nutrition and proper planning so that it'll come out right? We don't do that. We want to give ourselves all the challenges we can. Sometimes we give our challenges of being real pretty. And being a real pretty person can be a challenge too. And being an ugly person can be a challenge. And being an ordinary person can be a challenge. It's all a challenge, and depending upon what you think it is. Now, I never thought I was particularly pretty as a young person, handsome or whatever the term might be. I never thought that. I looked at my graduation picture after, years later, and I looked back and thought, hey, you know, I was a good-looking kid. And at the time, I did not think that. Mm-hmm. At the time, I did not have any concept of me being good-looking or not good-looking, or being desirable by the girls or not. I had no concept of that. Only in later years did I find out about it. So, you see, there's a certain beauty, there's a certain innocence, there's a certain wisdom in not knowing. And in not knowing, we were beautiful people. We had great experiences, we had wonderful people that we knew, but we were walking our spiritual path probably more beautifully in our preteen and teen years than we ever imagined. Now you see, well, that's when they're finding their oats, and that's when they're testing the ground and stuff. That's right. That's right. They're testing the ground to see if the stable that they've come out of has values and what those values are. And that's the time that it's necessary for the parents to be very firm with the values. Not to be strict and mean with the values, but to be firm. And you're to be in at 8 o'clock. If you don't come in, we'll take away one of your privileges. Which privilege will you take away? You wait and see. If you come in after 8, you'll find out. So just come in before 8 every night, and you never have to give it a thought. Well, it's like writing a 100-word essay in your lesson for the school here. At first, it's tough to write the 100 words. And you scribble and scrape and take out a word or add a word and do everything. And after 3 or 4 lessons, you're writing a 100-word essay without even thinking about it. You count it up, and it's just confirming the fact that you already know. These are things that we build within ourselves. These are what are, you say, what if 100 words got to do it with benefit to us, you know? Well, it's building that self-diligence, that self-dedication. It's building that awareness of who we are and that we can do anything we set our mind to. You could tell yourself, I'm going to wake up at 6 in the morning and wake up right at 6 in the morning. You could say, well, I usually am off a little bit. Well, why are you off? That's because you've allowed yourself to be off. So, in simple things like that, we want to put the cause in motion, but we don't. We don't. How many of you have an alarm clock because you don't believe in yourself? You know, we don't believe in ourselves. Well, we have this inner alarm clock, which is far more accurate than any outer alarm clock. The outer alarm clocks, the outer clocks can be off, the electricity go off, and everything else like that, but you set your inner clock for 6 o'clock, and you wake right up at 6 o'clock. And you look at the clock, and it says 2:30 or something. You know, and say, well, what's all this about? Well, then you realize the light was off, and electricity was off, and the clock was off. But we just don't realize that we have within us everything. And it's not within us. Everything is not within us. We are one as all, the universal. And this clock is in the universal consciousness. It's not in the brain. It's received by the brain, but it's in the universal mind that this is. And we, in our attachment to the universal mind, we know all these things. And we can tune into it and be part of it, but we don't do it. We have the ability to train ourselves in these very simple little things, and we don't do it. I gave illustrations by the dozen of techniques. People say, I want a technique. I want a technique to use. I want a technique to use. And so some of them that I had read about and heard over sounded pretty good. So I said, okay, take a magnifying glass and count the number of little bumps in a pinhead. And what's so exciting about that? It's not a matter of being exciting. It's a matter of diligence and dedication. How many bumps can you count in a pinhead and not get lost as you're counting? How many straws can you count in a haystack and not lose your place? You know, or the sand on the seashore, how many can you count? Well, you level them out and you have them smooth, and then you take a small portion, and then you count that small portion, and then you multiply that by the larger portions, and it tells you how many of those small portions in the large portion. You have a figure for the number of sand, because it will be the same. Now, why is it we don't do that? Oh, how could you ever count the sand? How could you ever count the stars in the sky? One at a time. One at a time. And then you're just about done, and because you've been so diligent, you say, I know that I know that I know how many stars are in the sky. And you say, there are maybe 3 billion in our view that we can see, 3 billion. And so out comes the computer printout based upon the facts and says there are 3 billion. Now, we knew that beforehand. We didn't have to go counting the stars. We didn't have to go doing all those things, because we know it ahead of time, but we don't take advantage of it. We don't apply it in our world. And we should apply it, because this is what it's all about. If we just were not human, then we'd be just fine. But we're human. And human means that we're subject to the temptations of the flesh and the thoughts that go through our mind and the ideas that go through our hearing. And you hear a beautiful marching music and you want to march. You hear a lullaby and you want to go to sleep. You hear a waltz and you want to dance, you know. So why is it that we have all these little turn-ons? Well, let's have some turn-ons now for walking our spiritual path. Let's have a turn-on that every time you stub your toe, you say, I'm home perfect. Let's have a turn-on that every time someone says to you, but you're only human, you say, that's right. Now, why did I say that's right?
Not arguing.
Yeah, don't argue. Don't give them any cause to keep on talking about being only human. That's right. You know the truth. Your name is Ronald Reagan.
That's nice.
That's nice. No, that's right. See, you just say, that's right, and there's no discussion. You're not Ronald Reagan. What do you want to do? I said you're Ronald Reagan. You said this. That's right. You know you're not Ronald Reagan. Well, if you think I'm Ronald Reagan, I'm happy. If you want to call me Flower, you can call me Flower. You know, like the little skunk in the flower patch. But it's up to us. It's up to us. We can be anything we want. And we are anything we want. Now, what would you like to be called? What would you like to be? How would you like to live your life? Yeah, you want to be called God. Well, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You can't be called God unless you know what God is. And God is all. If you know that, then you're all right. But if you think that God is any one little thing, you got trouble. You can't have it. Ingeborg, in writing her, whatever you wrote,
tape review,
your tape review, she started having God as a lowercase God. But she hadn't introduced us to the fact that this was a lowercase God. You can't just all of a sudden be uppercase God and then drop to lowercase God. And people say, well, what is she talking about? What does she mean by this? You have to define that and then then do it whatever you want to do, but be consistent too. So I changed them to all uppercase gods because you hadn't defined them as lowercase god. Now, what does lowercase god mean? Just the simple lowercase god. Yeah. It means the allness, right? Mm-hmm. What does an uppercase god mean?
A particular.
A particular one. That's why I'm after you so diligently on the and the a. Are you a bird in the hand or are you the bird in the hand?
The bird.
No, you're a bird. A bird in the hand. You see, you are one of the infinite number of birds that are available. Now, if you were the bird Johnny McCaw, then you would be the bird Johnny McCaw, because there's quite likely only one Johnny McCaw bird. But when you are a generic bird, then you're not specific, you know. Do you want to be specific? You do? Do you want to be a particular god, the god of the Jews, the god of the Christians, the god of the what? Well, yeah, this is what happens when you get the God, the only God there is, you know. And that's true. But if you're going to say a God, then you're more really in what you're thinking about. But when you get to the point of walking your spiritual path, you will be the God. What is necessary to be the God?
Oneness, allness.
You're the only one that is. You're the only God there is. You're the oneness, the allness. You're everything, but you're the only God. When you have a God, then you have many gods, don't you? And if that's what you want, that's fine too. But you're the oneness, the allness, and that's what you want to express. So, if we just were not human, being not human is quite something. It's something that very few people have been able to work with. Even the saints, remember, would say, "Oh Lord, help my unbelief," you know. Which is what such a, it's like stubbing your toe and saying, "Ow." You can't do that. When you don't have a belief that's secure, you don't say, "Oh Lord, help my unbelief." You just say, "Lord, I believe. I believe." You know, if that's what you're doing. And this is what the little children do. They say, "I believe. I believe in Santa Claus." And then Ellen was talking to Brian about his little boy and saying, "Does he still believe in Santa Claus?" And the boy, Brian, said, "No, he doesn't. You know, he's not some stupid little kid who believes in Santa Claus. You know, he's a mature young person, you know." And what Ellen wanted was for him to say, yes, he does believe in Santa Claus. And yes, he does want to come to the church picnic or the church party, you know. But she drew out of him that he didn't want to come. He drew out of him that he doesn't believe in Santa Claus. You don't say, "Does your son still believe in Santa Claus?" Like saying, "Oh boy, you know. Isn't it wonderful how everyone believes in Santa Claus and how all of us, no matter how old we are, we still believe in Santa Claus?" Because in some way, Santa Claus is the theme, the tradition, the way. Then you get a yes answer, you know. Then you get a positive answer. And then you might even have him come and be part of the game. But when you say, "Santa Claus? Who believes in the fairy, tooth fairy?" You know, hey, anybody who gets a quarter under their pillow says, "I believe in the tooth fairy. I don't mind. You take my old tooth, which I don't need anymore, and leave me some money, and I don't care. I believe in the tooth fairy. I don't care whether it's mommy or daddy or who it is, because I believe." You see, we want to learn to play the game. And as we learn to play the game, then we have a good time. And then it's not that we're just only human. It's that we're divine. Because we are leaving behind the possession of right and wrong on a human level and entering into the absolute level where there is no right or wrong. So think on these things. If you're ready to experience that we are just humans, then you're a long ways away. But when you're ready to believe that we are divine, you're right there. Because that's what it's all about. Well, take this thought and run with it. It's a lot of fun. We'll be having more of these type of thoughts shortly, too.